This podcast was recorded Thursday, May 16th at 11:05 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like the Democratic Party will put a cap. They'll put a cap on the number of presidential candidates. We're up to 23 right now.
We might be up to more by the time this podcast drops. At least I've heard of Bill de Blasio. Let's talk politics. Welcome to Snollygoster, WOSU's weekly look into Ohio's political trenches. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. How we look at drugs is changing here in Ohio and around the country. Take a look at marijuana, for example. It is legal. It's legal in many places now. Here in Ohio, we have legal medical marijuana. And our neighbor to the north has recreational pot, which is legal.
Ohio's 14th medical marijuana dispensary is set to open next week in southwest Ohio, Ohio's biggest conservative stronghold. So I think it's safe to say at this point, the stigma surrounding marijuana is dissipating.
Absolutely. And then there is the opioid crisis. It's now a common belief that most, if not all, people who use heroin or opiate painkillers are sick. They are addicted to the drug. What they are doing is illegal, but most now feel tough criminal penalties are not what the users deserve.
That's right, and so policymakers are trying to catch up. Efforts to decriminalize marijuana continue to grow around the country and in Ohio in cities like Columbus and Cincinnati. Prosecutors and lawmakers are looking at reducing criminal penalties for just possessing drugs like heroin.
Sentencing reform advocates asked Ohio voters last fall to change the state's constitution to lower drug penalties. They said no, and by a large margin. Now lawmakers are considering changing state law to basically do the same thing. Senate Bill 3 is a bipartisan bill that looks to reclassify low-level drug possession charges from a felony to a misdemeanor. It also would increase penalties for drug trafficking.
Joining us now to talk more about this effort and the shifting politics around drug policy is Gary Daniels. He's the chief lobbyist at the American Civil Liberties Union of Ohio. Gary, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with a piece of audio from Wednesday's Senate testimony, which I understand you were a part of as well. This is Charles Jenkins. He says his son Alex caught a felony conviction for drug possession, never spent any time in prison, but he could not get a job because of that conviction. He then relapsed and eventually overdosed.
People suffering from addiction like my son Alex shouldn't be branded with this felony for their entire life.
Gary Daniels, that's essentially what this bill seeks to do. It would take low-level drug possession felony charges and turn them into misdemeanors. Talk about really the basic goal of this bill.
Yeah, Senate Bill 3 does a variety of different things, but by far the biggest thing it would do is exactly what you're talking about, and that's take those low-level felony 4 and 5 drug possession crimes, and then the idea is turn them into unclassified misdemeanors, take these people, and then the idea is to route them through drug courts in their local communities with those misdemeanor offenses. And if they agree to go to treatment, then they would not have potentially that offense on their record. We think at the ACLU of Ohio, it's a good starting point. We think Senate Bill 3 could be made much stronger than it is. I think probably the most positive change that we're advocating is to make it retroactive. And that is, let's not just, if this is a good idea, then let's not do it just with people going forward after Senate Bill 3 is passed. But what about all those people left behind? What about all those thousands and thousands of people in Ohio that have these drug convictions and have spent time in prison, spent time in jail, or faced other kinds of penalties? Maybe they spent no time in prison or jail, but they're facing other penalties as a result. So retroactivity, I think, is something that Ohio will be hearing an awful lot about with regard to Senate Bill 3.
Let's take the case of Alex Jenkins, the man who his dad very eloquently and emotionally testified about at the hearing this week. How would this bill affect Alex's case or someone like him?
There has been growing recognition over the last several years in Ohio and other places that when you get a felony record, it shuts all kinds of doors for you. good luck getting a decent job, good luck getting housing, good luck getting loans for education. It affects people in so many different ways and follows them around, as we have seen, for the rest of their lives. There are so many what are known as collateral sanctions from having a felony record that it makes it extremely difficult, if not impossible, for so many people to get their lives back together as a result of having that felony record.
So this is much more than just not filling prisons with low-level offenders or having them avoid jail time. It's actually so they don't have to check that box when they apply for a job, and they're not discriminated against for getting a good job and getting their lives back online.
Right. It's trying to take away that stigma and all those effects of that felony record, and that would help certainly a whole lot of people in Ohio, because you have so many people, and the legislators are now hearing from these people, so many people who want to do the right thing, who want to get their lives back together, who want to be working, and so many of them, all they see is closed doors in their faces.
Yeah, Charles Jenkins said his son couldn't get a job at the dollar store nearby. Gary Daniels, voters rejected issue one last fall by a 3-1 margin. Does this bill at all subvert the will of voters? Are lawmakers doing an end around voters?
No, I don't think so, because I think probably I think there were a lot of people who agreed with the overall goal of issue one last November. What they didn't like or what they were uncomfortable with was putting it into the state constitution, which inherently then is inflexible, because the only way to change the state constitution really is to do it via a ballot initiative. And so if you do it via the legislative route, well, then if things aren't working so well, you can just go through the legislature, hopefully, and tinker with it a little bit more. And that's really not possible unless you get something on the ballot with a ballot initiative. So there's a lot of people out there, and it should not be underestimated, that absolutely support not treating people with drug problems as criminals and locking them away in cages. They think these people need help. And so Senate Bill 3 then is to say, okay, if we're not going to do this via constitutional amendment and people don't think that's the right way to do it, what can we do as a legislature?
Some of the opponents to issue one last fall were prosecutors and drug court advocates and judges. And what they fear is that if you reduce the penalties for drug possession from a felony down to a misdemeanor, it removes an incentive, you know, a penalty, but an incentive for offenders, people who are addicted, to seek treatment programs offered by the drug courts. Would this bill remove the penalty, which encourages folks to get well rather than, say, face a prison term?
Well, these people would still have misdemeanors and potentially, and they could, and that in Ohio can carry up to 364 days in jail. So it's not like there's zero possibility that people would be facing jail time as a result of these lower level drug crimes. But, you know, the problem is for 40 or 50 years now, we've tried to arrest and convict and incarcerate our way out of drug problems. And by any objective measure, the war on drugs has been an absolute failure. But there are a lot of judges out there. There are a lot of prosecutors out there. And frankly, there are a lot of legislators out there who think, no, we should just keep trying and doing this over and over again. And it's simply not working. And we need to think about this in a different way and do something about it. Because, you know, in Ohio, we have a very high prison population, well above capacity. It's been that way for decades here. And something has to give at some point.
Gary, as Mike said, prosecutors opposed issue one. When it comes to Senate Bill 3, they still say the possession levels are too high, 49 doses of heroin, 59 doses of meth. They argue that someone with that amount could actually be selling drugs and not just using them. How do you determine that line between possession and trafficking?
The bill tries to make a distinction between you know, what it does is it raises some penalties for trafficking and then lowers those penalties for the lower level possession. And the idea is, among the legislators who support and led to the introduction of Senate Bill 3, is let's draw that distinction. We're here to help out people, not people who are trafficking drugs. Although, you know, there's a lot of nuance there too, because not everybody who traffics is, you know, some, you know, drug cartel from a foreign country type of thing.
A lot of people who deal with addicts. Right, they're people who are supporting their own habits.
Right, but it's no surprise that the prosecutors have an issue with Senate Bill 3. You know, I've been tangling with them for years and years in the legislature, and they're against every type of reform that's ever introduced in the state house. So that they would try to stand in the way of Senate Bill 3, as I'm sure we'll be seeing more and more of as the weeks and months go on here with the process. This is no surprise. This is their MO.
This bill would also increase penalties for trafficking. Is that a good compromise? Reduce the penalties for simple possession, get these folks into treatment, but also increase penalties for folks who are legitimately trafficking this stuff, not just, say, supporting their own habit.
For the ACLU of Ohio, it becomes a hold-your-nose kind of thing. Because, again, you know, we think that the war on drugs, again, it has been an absolute failure, and that you're not going to incarcerate your way out of this problem. And then if you really, truly want to address drug issues, you have to address the demand side of it. And you know, here in Ohio, we don't have nearly enough treatment for people. There are wide swaths of Ohio where it's unavailable, or you're going to be waiting an awful long time to get into it, let alone, you know, whether that treatment itself is adequate or not. So one of the things that I think we have to be mindful with Senate Bill 3 is if we're going to be routing so many more people into treatment as a result of the eventual passage of Senate Bill 3, do we have enough treatment to accommodate them? Because currently, right now, that's not the case. So the issue with traffickers then is, and I think that the legislature fails to realize this in many ways, is you can take traffickers off the street and put them in prison. The problem isn't going away. There's always going to be traffickers who take their place because it's a simple supply and demand issue. I mean, just yesterday, the Senate passed a bill by a 31-2 margin to crack down on people who traffic drugs near treatment facilities, even if they have no idea that there's a treatment facility nearby, and even if their purpose isn't to purposely target someone who's in treatment. All they have to do is be within 3 football fields or so of a treatment center going any direction. So this is one of these classic Ohio one step forward, one step back kind of things. We're deliberating Senate Bill 3 while we're also passing this other bill that perpetuates the war on drugs.
But it is known that some drug traffickers do target treatment centers because it's the market. Folks are already addicted or prone to addiction are more likely to buy from those folks. So it's a tricky issue.
And the way to, and just briefly, the way I think to get around that and address that particular concern is, not to get too in the weeds here, but you put in a mens rea standard in the bill that says for people who are knowingly targeting people, and the bill does not include that, at least right now. This bill applies to everybody in every situation, making no distinction whatsoever among those being truly targeted by predators and those who are just happen to be in a certain neighborhood where there is a treatment facility.
Gary, right now the most recent polls say about 62% of Americans support legalizing marijuana. There does seem to be some appetite to legalize or to at least lower penalties for drugs here in Ohio. At the same time, we have a legislature controlled by Republicans, which have traditionally been less ready to lower penalties for drug crimes. What do you think is the likelihood of Senate Bill 3 passing?
I think the likelihood of Senate Bill 3 passing is very good. The question is, what is it going to look like? I think Senate Bill 3, the way it looks right now, is the way it's going to look very much when the Senate actually passes it. But, you know, you also have that other chamber. You've got the House over there, and you've got 99 people and personalities to deal with over there. And what are they going to think about Senate Bill 3? Will it be improved? Will it be weakened? What exactly is it going to look like? So that's always the, fun in the legislative world is, you know, what exactly will it look like? Is it going to be watered down into ineffectiveness by prosecutors and judges or other opponents? Will it be strengthened with retroactivity and some other things added to it? Or will it continue to be somewhere in between?
Well, the way the House is going with that lefty Larry Householder, you know, you're going to be basically legalizing everything if the way things are going. Anyway, just looking at the politics of this, Gary, to be talking about lowering drug penalties, you know, 15 years ago, we never would have talked about this. We never would have talked about legalizing marijuana. Now it's becoming pretty mainstream, and it's just a matter of when, not if, states legalize marijuana. What's it been like watching the politics of this, and why is the earth shifting a bit on these issues?
Well, you know, the ironic thing is here in Ohio, we decriminalized, you know, not insignificant amounts of marijuana back in 1975. So we were one of the very first states to do this. So while we see these other states, you know, now doing full-on legalization, you know, we were decriminalizing up to 100 grams, you know, a low misdemeanor up to 200 grams. So, you know, the odd thing is so why in the last 40-some years hasn't Ohio taken what I think would be just a sort of small additional step and just legalize it at that point if we've decriminalized it for decades here? And so I think a lot of what you see is, you know, just that sort of, you know, that kind of old-fashioned, old-thinking mentality about drugs and people who people think use drugs and everything else, when for an awful lot of people, look, you know, at least marijuana is no big deal. You know, you've got now decades of people who have used marijuana without, you know, driving their car off a cliff or committing all kinds of crimes or, you know, any of the other kinds of horror stories that people like to bring up. And so, you know, especially for the younger generation and other people, this just doesn't seem to be a big deal. So, you know, is Ohio eventually going to get there or not? I hear rumblings every so often that it will be on the statewide ballot again at some point. But of course, we haven't seen anything official yet with regard to that.
Just to be clear, it's still illegal to possess less than 100 grams of marijuana, but you basically got a traffic ticket, right?
Right, at the statewide level, right. That's, you know, it's a minor misdemeanor. You're not going to do time in jail. Yeah. You know, and now we have, though, of course, some cities, particularly a lot of smaller communities around Ohio, where they have had local laws that are slightly more strict than the state law, now dialing back their local laws accordingly, so that again, I think the big benefit is signaling to the legislature and lawmakers that you know, what they want to do is create some momentum, and maybe we can get something done on the statewide level.
Can cities do that? I mean, can Columbus say pot's legal, or Cincinnati say pot's legal?
I don't think they can fully legalize it. No, yeah. that's what Shannon Harden has told me,
yeah,
the city council president here.
Right, they can't fully legalize it at the local level. We are what's known as a home rule state, where basically you have to follow state law.
It's like the gun
local
issue.
Communities, yeah, and local jurisdictions have flexibility with regard to what they want to do, but you can't wander too far off the reservation, basically. So, you know, voters in Toledo, we saw this a few years ago, where you know, their what was on the ballot initiative or what have you, started to reach into the felony level, and they were sued as a result by the state. And it's clear you can't, as a city, say, well, what's a felony at the state level, we're going to make a misdemeanor at the local level. But what you could do is say, what's a misdemeanor at the local level, we're going to make a minor misdemeanor. And that's what these local ordinances and local ballot initiatives, that's what we've been seeing, is that in communities you wouldn't expect perhaps that these things would be occurring. You know, these aren't, by and large, the big cities that are doing this, but these are local activists who are doing this, you know, in places like Fremont and Norwood and Windham and Newark and other places around Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Gary Daniels, it is fascinating to watch the shifting debate around drug policy here in Ohio. Gary Daniels from the American Civil Liberties Union of Ohio, thanks for joining Snollygoster.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
In other political news, should not be a shock, we now have the 22nd and 23rd Democrats who have joined the 2020 race for president. Governor Steve Bullock of Montana announced his campaign earlier this week.
I believe in an America where every child has a fair shot to do better than their parents. But we all know that kind of opportunity no longer exists for most people. Far too many, it never has. That's why we need to defeat Donald Trump in 2020 and defeat the corrupt system that lets campaign money drown out the people's
then
voice.
Then New York Mayor Bill de Blasio announced he's running for president.
I'm a New Yorker. I've known Trump's a bully for a long time. This is not news to me or anyone else here, and I know how to take him on.
Very serious sounding. Bill de Blasio sounds tough.
Yeah, that was a good video.
Sounds like a cop show.
It went from cheery music to the shot of the White House, and then like that Hollywood doom music came in.
Bill de Blasio, was he wearing like a fedora?
No.
What was he wearing?
No, he's just roaming around New York.
I haven't seen that video.
I swear, there are 23 candidates for president, but they all have the same speechwriter. They all have. They're all saying the same.
All about the middle class. They're all.
You know, Trump's a bully. We got to get rid of Trump. We need.
Well, yeah, they're running. They're not running against each other. They're running against Trump, just like every Republican was running against Hillary Clinton in 2016.
23 candidates, one speechwriter. How are we going to pick?
We'll pick. Someone will pick.
I think de Blasio might gain some traction.
He has name recognition. At least I've heard of him. I had never heard of Steve Bullock.
Yeah.
Bullock?
Bullock from Montana. I mean, he argues that he's your sort of, again, the sort of Western, Midwestern Democrat, conservative, moderate to conservative liberal views, and he can appeal to the folks in the Rust Belt and things. He's the same as Tim Ryan or, you know, even Joe Biden, you could say.
Right. How many? There are like probably a half dozen white 60-year-old centrist Democrats running for president now.
Bill de Blasio is not one of those. He wants free Medicare. He wants free kindergarten.
He's closer to Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders.
And he has the track record that appeals to far left. He's implemented these things in New York City, because it's much easier to do that in New York City than across the country.
But, right.
I just, at some point, people are going to start to drop out of the race, don't you think?
You would think. I don't know. The timeline of this, I mean, things have to certainly coalesce by primary season, which is going to be, I mean, around Christmas, you would think all the pretenders are dropped out by then.
The debates in June, I think, is one sort of, if you use the Kentucky Derby Preakness Stakes metaphor, it's like the first post in the trip around the track. I think
I was
debates,
not going to use that metaphor, but I'm glad you did.
The Preakness is this weekend, I believe. Yes, Preakness. Kentucky Derby controversy.
They're going to have a real winner?
I don't know. We'll get into how horses can cheat in a future episode. But I do think that the debates, you know, only 20 or 19 are going to get onto the debate stages, because it's two nights.
That even seems like a lot.
It's crazy.
20 for a debate?
Yeah. Well, two. There'll be two of 10.
There's going to be rounds. All right, time now for our weekly segment where we find the shrewdest politician or political move that lives up to the esteemed title of WOSU's Snollygoster of the Week.
And this week, there are probably thousands of them.
Literally.
We're looking at you, diehard fans of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I guess you could say the team is the Snollygoster.
I'm going with fans.
Okay,
fans.
We'll get there. The Columbus City Council recently passed a 5% ticket tax on Blue Jackets tickets, other entertainment around town. Most of that tax money will go to repair the Blue Jackets' home, Nationwide Arena, a home owned by the taxpayers of Columbus and Franklin County, and a home that the Blue Jackets enjoy rent-free.
So here's where the snollygostering comes in. That ticket tax goes into effect July 1st, and the Blue Jackets are telling season ticket holders if they commit to buying season tickets before July 1st, they won't have to pay the ticket tax. And that's true. Even if they don't actually pay for the tickets until the fall, they will not get hit with that 5% ticket tax.
So it's like public radio where you just make the pledge?
Yes, your pledge now.
Pledge now and pay later. You're fine. You don't have to pay the tax.
That's right.
That's pretty funny, because they have very close ties with Franklin County. They're sort of a pseudo public organization when you look at their arena, and now they're giving people a way to make their way around this tax.
And this tax money helps keep up or helps fix the arena. Anyway,
maybe they want like the kind of quaint, dumpy home arena like your Boston Red Sox.
No, that's really pretty nice now.
Is it now? It used to be a dump, right?
Yeah, it is. It was when I was
there's
a kid.
There's some romanticism in having like a, you know, kind of a crappy home arena. Maybe that's what they're going for.
Maybe that's it.
Home field advantage. Another fans want to come.
It's only a 1-year loophole. But so, Blue Jacket season ticket holders. You might be the fifth line, but you're also our Snollygosters of the Week.
They'll take it if it gets them back into the playoffs next year. Well, as always, please leave us a good review on iTunes. Tell your friends about us. Send us an email as well if you have a better Snollygoster of the Week suggestion for next week. You can send that email to snollygoster@wosu.org. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster on WOSU Public Media.